Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast on the Big Lead. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel. We're here with Lisa Byington, who is a play-by-play announcer and sideline reporter. She was made available to us on behalf of Fox Sports. She's calling the Big East Women's College Basketball Tournament, and she's a sideline reporter on the men's tournament later in the week. Last week, she called the Big Ten Women's Tournament. So I'm really interested, what is the difference as far as a preparation perspective goes when you're going to be calling versus doing sideline reporting?
I think it's vastly different. When I'm doing play-by-play for a game, I mean, I really feel like I have to know like 2 to 3 nuggets, especially with basketball, 2 to 3 nuggets about the top 7 players. And that's without even looking down at your notes. Like, you want to see, you know, Megan Smith make a play, and in your mind you have 2 or 3 things that you want to make sure that you tell about Megan Smith, and it's got to be on the spot. You have to know the big picture stories. I mean, you're talking for 2 straight hours, essentially, right?
Right.
With a sideline, it's more or less kind of picking and choosing your moments. I kind of equate it sometimes to getting in and off on the highway, like on the exit ramp, you know. With sideline, you just got to know when to get in and when to get out. And so with sideline, I think it's more understanding the major storylines. With basketball, sometimes it differs from sport to sport. And with basketball, sometimes you're given huddle access. So a lot of the stuff you don't really need to prepare for beforehand, a lot of your sideline work happens in the pregame or during the game. Because some of the most valuable things that you can offer to the broadcast is what you're observing or what you're hearing as the game is going on.
Right.
So I think with play-by-play, there's more maybe pre-preparation, especially for basketball, than there is for the sideline role.
And so you live in Chicago. We're recording this in Chicago right now. I don't mean to, like, crap on a program that you're about to be a sideline reporter on later this week, but we've been talking about it in the Big Weed Slack, and I don't understand why DePaul can't get some of these blue chip basketball players that come out of Chicago every year and for whatever reason don't stay in town.
You're talking about the men's program?
The men's program,
it's,
yes.
Because it's vastly different for the women's program. But, you know, with the men's program, there's probably, it's not probably just one reason. It's probably just a domino effect. And, you know, we're sitting across the street, basically, from what could be the turning point for maybe DePaul men's basketball, and that's Wintrust Arena and the amenities that it provides. I mean, they didn't really have the resources that they could offer some of these other recruits that are looking at some of the high-profile programs. And honestly, I think that really makes a huge, huge difference when you're comparing history to other programs or amenities and resources and buildings and access to things. When you're comparing that to other programs, DePaul had fallen short, and I think the university would be the first to admit that. So I think you have to start there and maybe use this year as a starting point and see maybe if the opening of Wintrust Arena in the first year for that program, if that's going to make a difference in the next 5 years.
This is kind of an outside-the-box idea, but we've been, like, discussing this in our internal channels. Could you see one of these schools, maybe like DePaul, maybe UIC, maybe even Illinois, just like going really outside the box and hiring one of these high school or AAU coaches around here to try to really pump up the pipeline of some of these elite talents?
Maybe not immediately from a head coach, from the high school to a college head coach. I think that's a little bit too outside the box. But, I mean, DePaul, you know, they connected to La Lumiere in that connection. I think maybe bringing in maybe assistants, which DePaul has done. I think that's a natural next step. And, yeah, I think you have 3 assistants on your staff, so why not pull in one of the top high school coaches in the country to be on your staff and like you said, have that direct recruiting pipeline?
I apologize in advance. This is my third straight question along these lines, but you went to Northwestern and, like, you mentioned amenities and new arena when you were talking about DePaul. Could you see Chris Collins potentially leveraging that and getting, I don't know, a top 10 player in America at some point to go to Northwestern?
Well, he already has a really good recruiting class coming in for next year. So the recruiting base for Northwestern men has already gotten better. The interest for Northwestern men is already unprecedented. I mean, they're going to walk into their new building, a refurbished Welsh Ryan Arena, next year and play in it for the first time. And the excitement, though they had a down year this year, there are season ticket holders. It's now all sold out, like the season tickets. And that's never happened in Northwestern history. So the interest is there. The recruiting is already on the upswing. So there are definite positive changes happening in Evanston.
Going back to your workload, in addition to everything we talked about in the introduction, you're also going to be on the NCAA tournament coverage for CBS and Turner. So if we're keeping score, that's three conference tournaments within 2 weeks of each other, followed by six games in 2 days. Do you add up how many games you are on the broadcast of in the month of March?
No, I haven't. You're making me tired thinking about it. I guess I could do it on the spot. I worked the women's Big Ten tournament. I was play-by-play for that, and I worked two games a day. And then seven games for the Big East women's tournament. I'll work all, I guess, seven for the... So I guess that's, what, 25, 26 games in an 11-day span, just with all those three back-to-back-to-back conference tournaments.
And then you got six
and then,
more.
And then I'll even have more than that for the NCAA tournament, because I'm going to be working the regional now for the NCAA tournament. So I will have six games that opening weekend, and then I'll have another three for the regional weekend. So, I don't know. So, but I think it's the stretch of the conference tournaments that that is fun. I mean, it's draining, yes, but it's fun. I mean, you know, like you just, it's just one continuous storyline. And I'm a huge basketball fan, Ryan. So basketball is my sport. It's my favorite sport. I love it. And so to be able to work and have the best seat in the house, and I don't care how many games it is and how many days. I mean, if that's my job, then, like, you know, sign me up every single time. I wouldn't choose a different profession or a different life.
Now, I know you just said basketball is your favorite sport, but you made headlines this past fall. And I know you said you can't wait for a period where this won't be a headline, but you were the first woman to call a game for football for the Big Ten Network. How did that go as an experience compared to calling basketball games?
Oh, it was much different. First of all, the attention was different. No one paid attention to my first basketball game. And I had never called a football game before, and that's counting high school, that's counting, at the D3 or D2 level. Like, this was my very first football game, and fairly or unfairly, I felt like the world was paying attention to it. And, you know, ironically, the week before, Dave Repson, who I look at as like kind of our lead guy at Big Ten Network, he's really the face of the Big Ten Network, he had made his debut the week before I did. He hadn't called a football game because he's normally in the studio, and no one paid attention and no one knew about it. And so that's kind of the unfair reality of what happened in my situation, and I understand why it happened. So that in itself, just handling the attention, trying to do a job and act like you've done the job before when you hadn't done the job before. And then just the mechanics of it is different. For football, as opposed to basketball, for example, you're about a mile high from the action. So I had to figure out when to use binoculars, because a lot of play-by-plays use binoculars. I don't think a lot of people realize that. But you're so far away from the action.
Yeah.
When to use your binoculars, when to look at the monitor. I have a spotter. You don't have a spotter, a person who can actually help you and point out names and numbers and stuff of tackles that are made, or you know, a receiver that makes a catch or an interception. You have someone there to actually be a second set of eyes for you. That doesn't happen in another sport. So there's all those kinds of mechanical variables that I had to adjust to that you get with football that you don't get anywhere else.
So I'm going to get the diplomatic first part of your answer of this next question out of the way. You love basketball and you're thrilled with the platforms that you're on, and to do the NCAA tournament and the conference tournament is great. But what is your ultimate aspiration in terms of a sporting event to be associated with on the broadcast, either play-by-play or as a sideline reporter?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Probably the Final Four, since basketball is my favorite sport. You know, it would be great, you know, obviously I think the all-time goal would be great to be a play-by-play for a Final Four, but it would be great to just be a sideline reporter and be a part of that environment. You know, I worked for Turner last year for, they had a new package, it was called a virtual reality package. So, you know, those, the virtual reality glasses you can get at an electronic store or something.
Yeah.
So we actually broadcast the Final Four in that manner. It was a sort of a 3D.
What is different about that? Because I've never really, people
always talk. Have you used virtual reality?
I have
not. Have you put on the glasses? Okay,
no.
So it's just exactly like you feel like you're actually there in the room. And that's what virtual reality is. It's a three-dimension, almost four-dimension kind of way to watch the game. So it's unusual. So
see that catching on as like a really big normal trend, or is it going to be something that is going to be on the periphery for a while?
I think it'll grow. I think, first of all, personally, I think the glasses probably need to get a little bit more manageable and lighter and easier to travel with. But, you know, we're in a world of technology, right? And everybody wants the next best thing. So what was cool about this, Ryan, is you could watch the Final Four. You put on like this, the virtual reality. I'm going to call them glasses. I don't know if that's the proper term for them. But you look to your left, and the arena shifts as if you were sitting in the seat in the arena. So you could see everything to your left. So you were the controller. You were the director of what you saw. If you looked up, you could see the ceiling. You could see the scoreboard. If you looked to your right, you could see the baseline to the right. So instead of you sitting and watching on your flat screen, and having an actual director tell you what shots you wanted to take, the person who was watching our virtual reality broadcast could pick the different camera angles and stuff and look
up or
look
down. I feel like
it
would make me dizzy. I don't know. I'm a slow technological adopter and releases that stuff. Because when video games went from 2D to 3D, I was just out. I couldn't spatially handle it.
Yeah, no, it was fun. We actually got a chance to put on. We didn't broadcast in that way, but we actually got a chance to just look at it from that perspective. And it was pretty cool. I do see some future possibilities for it.
Are there any play-by-play people out there that you've really leaned on as a mentor that have been like really helpful for you in terms of your trajectory up?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I was going into the football broadcast, I probably talked to 12 to 15 different play-by-plays as part of my preparation. It was one of the things I wanted to be very deliberate and intentional on. You know, obviously one of my first phone calls, because she is a female and has been through that, was Beth Mowins. I called her and talked to her. Mike Tirico has been very instrumental. He's very detail-oriented, so he can watch my broadcast and gives really good feedback. Kevin Kugler, who I've worked with several times at Big Ten Network, he's one of the, and I believe one of the more versatile play-by-plays out there. His recall is really, really good in-game. And he does both the radio and the TV side, and he's just, he can do any sport. And so I find him very valuable as reaching out as a professional and as a friend. You know, Tom Hart, who used to work at Big Ten Network, he's now with ESPN. And he brings, I think, a unique blend of being able to tell stories as a play-by-play, but also making the actual action very interesting. Tim Brando's always been very supportive. You know, and as a sideline reporter for some of the Big East stuff, I've worked with Gus Johnson, and you know, obviously we all know Gus's strength in terms of just making, if it's an exciting game with 2 minutes to go, you're going to want to tune in if Gus is doing the game. And he's got his own style, and he doesn't try to be anyone who he's not. And so that's what I appreciate about Gus Johnson. And so those are just some of the names that come to mind. There's been many, many others who have helped me along the way. But I think that's the important thing when you're in the business and in anything you do, Ryan, you need to reach out to people. And you need to get feedback. You need to hear the tough things about how you can improve. And those people, as well as several others, have provided that for me.
What is a college market that you've traveled to that you would not probably have ever picked to go on for a vacation or anything, but you went there and it's like they had great food, great people, et cetera?
I travel mostly to Big Ten and Big East cities, and so I'll keep it to Big Ten cities because a lot of the Big East cities are kind of actually bigger cities, and Big Ten is more like college towns. And I will say that I think Lincoln, Nebraska, and Iowa City, Iowa are the most underrated cities within
the Big Ten.
I've
been to Iowa City. What makes Lincoln underrated?
You know, they have a new Haymarket district with a lot of great restaurants, a lot of unique local places that just kind of give you a feel of, I hate going to chains. That's one of my rules, Ryan, when I travel. Uh-huh. I don't like to eat at chain restaurants if
that
I have the
sense.
Time
yeah.
and the place. I like to try something new and something different. And within just a couple block radius of this Haymarket district, I mean, there are a good choice of like 8 to 10 different restaurants that are unique to Lincoln. And so I love going down there and maybe trying something new.
Hmm.
And on
is there
top
one
of that,
you, I don't want to put you on the spot, but is there like one spot there that you want to give a shout out to where you just had something delicious?
Yeah, you know what? Actually, as weird as it sounds, there's a blue sushi place that, mm-hmm. And it might sound weird that I really like sushi in Lincoln, but I know it's a place I think that's in Lincoln and in Omaha. And I just love it. I think it's great. They have the best like sushi. They have the best lettuce wraps. It's awesome. They have a good little wine bar, and I forget the name of it, but it's actually in the basement of an Indian restaurant that I tried. And you wouldn't know it. Like you actually have to walk into the Indian restaurant.
Yeah, you have to go there deliberately.
You have to actually walk into the Indian restaurant and know that there are stairs that go down to this wine cellar. And so a friend told me about that. I wouldn't have known it existed, but I loved it. It was just this, like, it's a hidden little secret. The one thing about Nebraska, too, is their fan support is great. So no matter what sport you're doing, you know they're going to be excited about their Huskers.
My colleague Kyle Koster, and I wholeheartedly agree with him on this, when Mark Silverman got the job getting promoted from Big Ten to FS1 and broader Fox Sports, we were like, man, I hope he takes Campus Eats national. We love that show.
It makes me hungry every time I watch it. But I like it, too, because I always like to see how many places I've tried out. That's on that show, and I also like to
well,
get recommendations
it trends
too.
Greasy though.
It does. It does.
Which I'm fine with. I like greasy.
Yeah,
food,
no, you're
but,
right. You're right.
They don't like. They typically don't be like, oh, this place has the best grilled salmon.
Right, right, exactly. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. It's usually like steaks and burgers and fries and whatnot. The things that college kids eat, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, prediction time. Who do you have in the Big East women's tournament winning it? Who do you have in the Big East men's tournament? And to really put you on the spot before we even see the brackets, who would you think is your final four right now, men and women?
Oh, my
So I just
goodness.
Asked you four questions.
You did. Goodness gracious. Do I get paid extra for this, Ryan? Let's see. Okay, first question, Big East women. It's DePaul versus Marquette, and it's a matchup of last year's championship, which Marquette won. They split the regular series this year. DePaul's playing at home. Goodness. You know, I'm going to have to go with Marquette women. I think it's really, really close, though. It's hard for me to even make that pick. They both, I think, are dead equal in terms of just the emotion and the revenge factor. They both have different kinds of strengths, but they both like to go up and down. So I'm really just looking forward to a really fun game to call in that one. Big East men, I would love to see a 1-2 showdown. I'd love to see Villanova versus Xavier. There's something about Villanova having been there before, having that championship pedigree. Xavier has struggled against Villanova this year, but I'm going to go with, I think, Xavier beating Villanova in the championship for the Big East men. Final Four, I really haven't thought that far ahead. I like it for Big Ten teams. I like Michigan State as one. Man, I don't know, because there's on the men's side, there's so many upsets, Ryan. I'm gonna have to hold off on making my Final Four picks.
That's fair. You got to see the brackets at least.
My brain is mush too.
Yes.
You know, going through like 24 games in 11 days, I can't think that far. You'll have to check back with me on the Final Four.
Okay.
But I do like Michigan State. I can say that on the men's side, and I do like UConn on the women's side. How about that for not reaching for a pick for the women?
Is there anything that I didn't ask you that you're dying to discuss right now?
No. I think you did a really good, thorough job. Covering everything.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Anyways, that's Lisa Byington. Catch her Big East Women's Tournament, Big East Men's Tournament, and NCAA Tournament on the Brian Anderson, Chris Webber crew. Thanks to Fox Sports for making her available. This was the Glass Half Empty podcast on the Big Lead.
Turn stranger.